The Athletic.
Qatar list. Day 14 of the World Cup. The USA face their biggest orange menace since the 2020 election and get trumped by Van Gaal's Netherlands. Elsewhere, Messi marks his 1,000th match with some classic moments of magic as Oz come to the end of their yellow brick road. We review all of that and look ahead to Sunday's tasty lineup, France-Poland, and we'll be hearing from Demba Ba on England-Senegal. It's Totally at the World Cup, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Day 14 at the World Cup. Today's Totally listener has got Tim Spears here in the studio.
Hello.
Hi, Tim. And out in the mysterious East, it's Michael Cox. Michael, tell us about the room that you're currently in.
I'm in the media centre in Doha at 12:15, and it's probably the biggest room I've ever been in. It's absolutely huge.
Wow.
And there's about
your camera around?
I was going to say, it doesn't look that big from the view we've got.
I can try. I'm plugged
into a lot.
Listen,
you might be able to see this
though
on our YouTube channel, which is definitely worth checking out. Because Michael's rotating his... Jeez, it just goes on and on and on. I didn't think Qatar was that big.
Yeah, this room and Doha and Qatar are actually all the same size.
Jeez. There you go. That's one thing we learnt today. What are some of the others on day 14? The day, if you like, the World Cup got serious. Last 16 began. We had Netherlands 3, USA 1 in the afternoon, which means that Louis van Gaal's side next Friday will face Argentina after they, Saturday night, defeated Australia 2-1. Argentina, Netherlands, 1998 and all that. Next Friday, and of course we're looking forward to another set of last 16 games on the Sunday featuring England, but the biggest story really on Saturday, perhaps the fact that Pelé, who as we know has been seriously ill for some time, has now been moved to palliative care, as you've no doubt heard, listener. So that really overshadowing events in Qatar, the biggest name perhaps ever in football, and an absolutely splendid chap. Our very, very best wishes to him and all of his. Anyway, on to Argentina, Australia.
Amaga el centro, vino para McAllister, pegale McAllister, para quién, para Messi. ¡Gol! ¡Gol!
That was Leo Messi opening the scoring in Saturday night's Argentina-Australia clash, which finished 2-1. One or two nervous moments at the end for the Albi Celeste, but one message to take from this game, Michael: look out, World Cup, Messi started having fun again.
Yeah, I think he was. I think there were flashes of brilliance as well in the group stage. But yeah, he played well tonight. I didn't think they didn't create anything really before his opening goal. Although I did think they were actually moving the ball very quickly. I thought it was a first half where both teams played quite well. I think Australia did what they had to do. They were very compact. They were very solid. They were quite aggressive. And even though Argentina weren't really breaking them down, I think they were constantly shifting them. But yeah, obviously a fantastic goal from Messi. A fairly classic Messi goal. I love the way it was teed up as well. Was it Otamendi with the touchback? Just kind of playing almost a hold-up target man role briefly. Just doing whatever you've got to do to get Messi in the situation he wants to be in. But yeah, it was a lovely goal.
Messi had so many roles to play in that goal, including the hard man provoking the Aussie player, Bech, who then conceded the foul because he got a bit knocked over the whole thing, from which the move developed, which saw Messi scoring.
Yeah, a side of Messi you don't see too often, really. And yeah, it's a bit of a cliche. We were discussing it earlier, but I think Messi's one of the few players on the pitch who could actually score that goal. It was just so frustrating for Australia. That was exactly the type of goal that they were trying not to concede, and they were doing that really well. I was quite impressed with how disciplined they were. But it's literally half a yard, half a second. I think the ball goes basically through three players, including Suter's legs. Yeah, fantastic moment.
That was perhaps the moment for this Cinderella side. The clock struck midnight and struck it hard. Shortly after, it was Julian Alvarez who scored Argentina's second, pouncing on Matt Ryan's mistake after Rodrigo De Paul had put the press on, Michael.
It's been interesting this World Cup because it feels like there's more teams who are trying to play out and they're trying to get their goalkeeper to do, you know, advanced things with his feet. But it feels to me like there's just not the cohesion you have at club level. There's not the understanding at the back. And even though that was just an individual error, it wasn't about two teammates not communicating. I just can't help feeling there's going to be an even bigger goal at this World Cup that comes from a goalkeeper dallying on the ball in his own box. I mean, we did have it in the last World Cup final, actually, with Hugo Lloris's error, but that was a consolation goal. But yeah, it was unfortunate. There was, in the early game, US goalkeeper Matt Turner had a couple of nervous moments, I thought, with the ball at his feet, and you just constantly sensed that it might be about to happen in this World Cup.
Mm. Well, Australia tried it themselves a couple of times on Emi Martinez. And indeed, even though Argentina were kind of playing on a completely different level to Australia for most of the game, there were a couple of moments when you thought, my goodness, Oz are going to open this up again. I mean, they get a goal back. And then with pretty much the last kick of the game, they very nearly equalised.
Yeah, well, there was the Behic run earlier when he took on five players. Shaping up to be one of the all-time World Cup goals. It was that good. Late chance for Qual. Newcastle bound and just couldn't quite squeeze. In fact, it was a really good save from Emi Martinez. Mm. You've got to give credit to Australia. I don't mean to sound patronising when I say they're probably the most spirited team we've seen at the tournament so far. You know, if you look at their XG combined in four matches, it's not as much as Romelu Lukaku's second half XG for Belgium the other night. So, they definitely squeezed as much out of themselves as they could have. And, you know, there are a lot of players here who just don't ever play in these type of games. I was looking at some of their next opponents when they get brought back down to earth in Scotland and Italy and England. They're playing the likes of Livingston, Motherwell, Cardiff. So, yeah, they live the dream, I think, and hopefully raise the profile of the game back home, which is one of their sort of ambitions for the tournament, and I'm sure they've done that.
Yeah, well, they gave us a lot of enjoyment. By the same token, Michael, there has been a narrative with Argentina that they started in shocking fashion and then begun to show signs of life, begun to show the real Argentina, and I guess you could see parts of today's game as part of that, but then again, they were facing technically the worst team in the last 16.
Yeah, that is probably true. I thought it was interesting how defensive they went, actually, when they're forced to make a substitution, bringing off Papu Gomez and brought on Martinez as a fifth defender. I mean, they can play, but they're also quite, a very aggressive team. They defend well when they have to. They do the dirty stuff. They get in last-ditch blocks. And Martinez, of course, made that brilliant last-ditch tackle on Behic when he went through. So, yeah, they've got two sides to them. They've got a couple of fantastic technical players, but I think more than anything, they are quite rugged. And I think that might be more obvious when they play better teams who arguably might outplay them technically. But yeah, I just think Argentina can dig in more than most of the favourites.
All right. Well, one of those better teams, of course, might well be Netherlands, who they will be facing next Friday after the Netherlands defeated USA Saturday afternoon 3-1. We'll talk about that game next.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet, the home of squads. Squads is a weekly free-to-play game. You reveal five players across the week which make up your squad, and you can earn cash each time they score in the selected games. The cash amount is decided by LiveScoreBet's prize wheel and can range from 10p up to £50 per goal, which you can spend once the final player is revealed. Find out more and play squads for yourself for free at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only and full terms and conditions apply. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
All right, Netherlands 3, USA 1. From Memphis to Dumfries in 60 minutes. Michael, you were at this game.
I was, yes. It was, I actually really enjoyed it technically.
Yeah.
I think of all the stadiums here, the Khalifa is not great. It's an athletic stadium with a big space between the pitch and the fans, which I think you can tell on TV. And I must say the atmosphere was quite disappointing. But as a game, I thought it was really interesting. Two sides with completely different approaches, some really good goals, lots of incident, a couple of missed chances. I thought both games today actually were fantastic. I mean, if the rest of the tournament continues in that kind of style, I think we'll be in for a real treat in the knockout stages.
Have the Netherlands now turned up?
I think so. I always got the impression that they were going to be a little bit better against teams who came onto them a bit. I mean, they're playing a very similar way to how they did under Van Gaal in 2014, which is completely the opposite, really, of what you associate with Van Gaal football. It's reactive, it's counter-attacking, it's depending on a couple of individuals with pace to do the damage on the break. I mean, they scored that wonderful opener, which was, I suppose, a typical Van Gaal goal when you look at the style of football he likes throughout his career. But in general, I do think they basically want to play on the break. And against the US, they were playing against a team who I think do want to dominate, not necessarily in possession, but certainly in terms of their pressing. And when the Dutch broke past that first press, they were really dangerous. I mean, it's only the second game this tournament that Depay has played alongside Gakpo up front, but they had so much speed. And actually, I thought Van Gaal did quite well to make a clever change at halftime, because he brought on Bergwijn, who was essentially a third attacker. I mean, if you're 2-0 up and you bring on an extra attacker, it says something about your intent. And that intent was to offer more on the break. I think they were the better side, technically, tactically, and more than anything else, just in terms of finishing. I mean, if Pulisic puts that chance away 5 minutes in or whatever it was, then we've probably got a different game.
Absolutely. There seemed to be a big divide of opinion among US supporters whether the US MNT had been taught a lesson and had been naive, essentially, or whether it was just came down to lack of a proper finisher.
Yeah, there is that. They made some really, really daft mistakes for some of the goals. I mean, that first goal, I've seen some people say that it was poor defending from the US to kind of allow them to sweep through, but it was pretty much perfection, really, from start to finish. The Dutch have never scored a goal with as many passing sequences in the World Cup ever. When you think of some of the teams that they've had over the years, that's pretty impressive.
So 20 passes, and you mentioned defensive lapses. One of them would be Tyler Adams, who gets a bit, I think, mesmerised by the Netherlands passing. And meanwhile, Memphis Depay kind of steals behind him and finds an ocean of space, much like the one Michael's currently sitting in which to score the first goal. Michael, it was a special goal, surely.
I thought it was brilliant, actually. It's the most kind of enthused I've been about anything. I was just delighted to witness it. It was brilliant. And I know there's, you can find some examples of passing moves that lasted longer in terms of actual number of passes. There was that famous Argentina goal against Serbia and Montenegro in 2006, which I think was 35 passes or something like that. But a lot of goals like that, the first 20, 25 passes are kind of irrelevant and under no pressure. Whereas I thought almost every pass in this move had a real purpose, whether it was playing out from the press or breaking through the press or, of course, playing the final pass at the end of it. It was just brilliant. And it was, I think, quite out of keeping with much of what the Netherlands have done in this tournament. I wasn't really expecting that from them. But yeah, fantastic teamwork. And I think the US, they did make mistakes, not just in that goal, but in the whole game. I mean, some of the defending, you can probably say about every goal. I think particularly the third goal, the defending was really poor. But I just thought it was a really good game. I thought it was a game where, the US turned up and wanted to dominate and wanted to play and wanted to force the issue. And I think that is the right way to play for them long term. It's a very young squad. I think the second youngest in the tournament after Ghana. And obviously they're working towards the World Cup in 3.5 years' time. They need extra players. They certainly need a number nine. I think that's the big weakness. But overall, I've been really impressed with the way that they played in this tournament in pretty much all four games.
Watching the Dutch opening up the US side, did it make you wonder a little bit more about why England so struggled to break them down? Are the Netherlands just that much better a side?
don't think so necessarily. I think the US just produced a better performance in that game for me. They didn't quite turn up today. It was interesting to see Marco van Basten quoted today. I don't know if you've seen. He said, two great goals. The rest is something to cry about. As a football lover, I ask myself, what am I looking at? Zero initiative. Which is, I'd be interested to, you know, to kind of see and hear what the rest of the Dutch media and fans think of the football they're playing. I mean, it's pretty effective, and I'd have them as slight favourites to go through against Argentina. I also think it's worth mentioning the Dutch keeper, Noppert, who's one of the stories of the tournament, you know, obviously coming in for his debut. But he was crucial today because he made that really good save from Christian Pulisic early on.
Mm.
And then there was another one in the second half where there was a through ball to Hadji Wright, and it looks like he's through on goal. You can't even see the keeper coming off his line on the screen, and then literally he's there within half a second to claim at his feet. Really, really important save. I think there might have been 2-1 at that point. So yeah, great story. If people don't know, you know, he's out in here playing for Heerenveen and hadn't won a cap before the first game of the tournament, and he's been one of the best keepers so far.
Mm. Hadji Wright, as you say, it had got to 2-1. Hadji Wright scoring that goal with a training ground move, Michael.
I honestly actually don't know what happened. We don't get great replays.
Okay.
In the press
Tim,
box.
can you tell Michael what happened?
The finish in particular.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like he's trying to flick it in with the inside of his heel.
I thought it just bounced off him. He's facing away from goal. This is what I understood. He's facing away from goal. The ball comes into him and it just bounces off his foot over his head and over Noppert's head.
I thought that's what he was trying to do, but he got it all wrong.
Oh.
Because his foot's at the wrong trajectory.
Right.
But I think that's why it is aimed goalwards, because that's what he was trying to do. I just thought he got it all wrong, and that's why
he was trying to do that.
It's a shame that it wasn't the winning goal, because he'd have to lie about his intentions for the rest of his life.
Whereas
now he's probably going to get forgotten about. But it was an extremely unusual finish. I don't think I've seen one like that before.
Okay, Michael, let's talk about the most surprising moment though at the Khalifa. A Saffron from Republika who turned up before the game to sing. Well, I mean, ready to go. What else was she going to do? First Chesney Hawks, and now this. Is there one of these at each game, or we just don't hear about it?
Yeah, there's also been a French guy who comes along and plays a cover of Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz. And I don't know who he is, but he was at... So these guys, they tend to make multiple appearances. So Saffron from Republika did both games tonight.
Oh.
I was sat alongside Jules for the third of the performances I saw from the French fella, and did ask Jules who he was. And he did not know. So must be about as famous as Saffron is in...
It wasn't Philippe Auclair, was it?
No, sadly not. That would have been entertaining. Hmm. I was in the toilets when Saffron started, and I don't mean to be rude, but I honestly thought it was some kind of karaoke performance from a kind of adjoining room or something, because it wasn't particularly true to the original, I think it's fair to say.
But who's booking these 90s? But is Terry Christian out there kind of getting on the phone? And who's next? Mr. Wazzo was my choice. They could get, remember that yellow puppet?
Yeah, was that 90s?
Nods along. I think it was late 90s, yeah.
Yeah, 99, I reckon.
Okay.
Maybe 2000.
All right, meantime, USMNT, on a more serious note, pack their bags and head home to prepare, as you say, for co-hosting the next World Cup. Before he made his way to the airport, Paul Tenorio joined us for some parting thoughts on America's tournament. Is it fair to say that the USMNT got taught a lesson, Paul, in that game? And if so, what was it?
For me, if there's one thing they take away, it's that they have to be more ruthless in the final third. They have to be more exact in front of goal. They have to put away their chances. And in this World Cup, they didn't. Through qualifying, they didn't. Some of that is about the personnel that they have or they don't. They're lacking that number 9. But some of that also is about sharpness in those key moments, and without those, that ability to punish teams, you're going to always have to survive on the edge. And tonight, against a good team that punished the U.S. when they had their moments, it was the difference in the game.
USA's starting strikers with no goals in 6 shots and just 1 on target across the 4 World Cup matches. So the hunt is on now for a number 9 for your next tournament. Is it the source of much debate in the States as to why a nation the size of America hasn't produced somebody more effective?
Sure. I mean, I think we know already that there was a sort of lost generation of American soccer players that led directly to missing the World Cup in 2018. You know, one of the players who we felt was going to be a part of the cycle who ended up not kind of maintaining that form to stay in the picture for the World Cup was Jozy Altidore. I think a lot of people were hoping that he could make it through this cycle and be that guy. And you know, even going into this World Cup, there were questions, obviously, of who Greg Berhalter was going to bring. Ricardo Pepi was a forward who had a little bit of form and then went to Augsburg and didn't score for a year and went to Holland and started scoring. And ultimately, Greg Berhalter left him off his roster. And he said at the time, you know, maybe that isn't the right decision. You know, maybe after the World Cup, we'll look back and say, I should have brought Ricardo Pepi, and he'll have the attitude that I should have brought him. I think certainly those questions will be asked, considering the lack of production at that number nine position. But even when you look into the youth ranks right now, there's not a clear striker that's emerged. Granted, this is a team that, you know, the players we were watching on the field today are 24, 23, 21, 20 years old. There's a lot of young, bright attacking talent. But I think the big question around this next cycle and ahead of 2026 will be, you know, can there be a striker that emerges from that next generation? And certainly you hope that this country can produce that. They've done it in the past. There have been forwards who have gone on and competed on big stages, whether you go all the way back and you look at Brian McBride or you look at Clint Dempsey or even Jozy Altidore on, you know, when you put on a U.S. jersey was a pretty efficient goal scorer. But right now, I think that's going to be the question that dominates the next few years as the U.S. tries to find that guy who can step up and be counted on.
And as we wrap up then the U.S.'s participation in the Qatar World Cup, what marks out of 10 would you give them in Qatar?
You know, I think I would say it's probably a solid 7, even with the disappointment of tonight's result. I thought that there were moments throughout this tournament where the U.S. stepped up into the big challenges when they needed to. They were the better team, I thought, for a good portion of the game against Wales, certainly against England, for the first half against Iran, and then understandably had to defend as Iran threw everything forward to try to stay alive in the tournament. And when I look at this game against the Netherlands, I see the difference between a team that is mature, that has experience on the field, that knows how to punish people. And you know, what strikes me is in the mix zone after the game, Tim Ream, 35 years old, he upped the average age of this team by about a year all on his own. And he talked about how after the game, he stood on the field and he just absorbed what it meant to him to be at the World Cup towards the end of his career. And you know, would he feel satisfied with his career? And he does. He feels like he left everything on the field in his entire career and that he hoped to transmit that feeling to these young players that nothing is guaranteed, that you have to embrace every moment you get. And I think when you consider that message and how young this team is, I think you give them a solid grade because they seemed to embrace the moments. And yes, they're not there yet to kind of get to that next round, to get back to the quarterfinals for the first time in 2 decades for the U.S. But I think they did a very good job for how young they are. And I think they've given the American people something to be optimistic about and to have some momentum ahead of 2026.
Paul Tenorio, here's a bit of Dutch commentary. See how much of this you can understand, listener.
Nah, Blind. Blind heeft alle tijd. Komt naar voorzet naar de tweede paal. De Vries, ja, weer! Ja! Ja, 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 ja! Assist van Daley Blind. En Denzel zijn de wingbacks vandaag. Het is het feest van de wingbacks bij Nederland.
Tim, wingbacks, Denzel Dumfries.
I mean, as far as sort of complete performances, one goal, two assists, clearance off the line as well, which was an important moment. Just another example of the really poor defending from the US for that, for the volley from Blind's cross. I mean, Blind is just allowed to put it over and he's completely unmarked. I mean, it's a nice finish, but still. Yeah, one goal, two assists, only the third Dutch player to ever be involved in 3 goals in a game before at a World Cup. And yeah, he was excellent. Him and João Cancelo would be the two sort of impressive fullbacks for me so far in terms of output. Yeah, game changer tonight.
Okay, and you have the Netherlands slight favourites over Argentina for next Friday. What do you think, Michael?
I can see it being quite a scrappy game, actually, despite the fact tonight's were both very good. I just think Argentina are quite cautious with the use of possession and, like I say, quite physical and aggressive. I think the Dutch probably tend to play on the counter-attack. So, yeah, I must say the game in 2014 between them wasn't particularly good, was it? And I do think the Dutch play in quite a similar way. Actually, Argentina probably play in quite a similar way. So, yeah, if you offered me one goal in that game, I'd probably take it, to be honest, judging from the last one.
All right. Well, that's coming up next Friday. Of course, before that, two more knockout games on Sunday. They are France against Poland and England-Senegal in the evening. So let's move on to those next.
Now, incredible game. When they play with a false nine, it changes everything.
A false nine, eh? What's that then?
Well, it's what he's a nine, but he's not really a nine in the area, and sorry, I just got to take that.
Urgent football question? Call the Athletic Emergency Football Hotline, 0800 0433 433. News, insights, analysis, The Athletic. Know the game, love the game.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LifeScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LifeScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Sunday's action, everybody. France-Poland, yes, at 3 o'clock. 7 o'clock UK time. Meanwhile, it's England against Senegal. And the winners of those two games will then meet each other in the quarterfinals, I'm guessing, next Saturday. That makes sense. England-Senegal, that's the runners-up at the European Championships against the winners of the African Championships, which is exciting. Tim, which channel is it on?
It's on ITV, which is very bad news.
Why is that bad news, Tim?
So they have an horrendous record when it comes to showing England games at a major tournament, particularly at World Cups. So they're, since 1998 in France... Rough numbers here, but you can read the very specific numbers online in an article.
I've got them right here,
what
actually.
What I wrote.
From your article?
Yes.
BBC, they've shown England 16 times at World Cups with 12 wins coming in those games. That's a win rate of 75%.
Yes.
ITV have had a roughly similar number of games shown, 15. How many wins, Tim?
Three.
Two.
Yes.
That's a win percentage of 13%.
But I got slightly confused there because there's one game that was screened on both. Which sometimes you count that, sometimes you don't.
Wow, so. That's like a Schrodinger's cat game. If a game is being shown on both, all right, it's probably worth us previewing the game even if it is on ITV. We'll be hearing from Demba Ba on Senegal's chances very shortly. How about that? He just rang up. I said, right, Denver, we'll squeeze you in. First, though, Michael, let's talk about England. They finished the group stage with the best record of all the 32 teams. They were joint top scorers in the group stage, and they haven't even had Harry Kane get a goal yet. Is there much more to come from this side?
I don't know if there's more to come, but I think they start this game as favourites. I don't think too much will change from the group stage. I think Southgate is happy with the players he's selecting. I think there could be a change of system to a back five later in the competition if England get there, but I can't really see a need to do it against Senegal. And yeah, I think England start as strong favourites. Senegal so far have been, I think, very well organised. They're good at making the opposition play badly, I'd say. They're quite scrappy. They can nullify a team's main threat quite well, I think. But it just feels to me like England should have enough. I think they've got the pace at the back to cope with the way that Senegal attack. And I think quality down the flanks will probably be crucial because Senegal block up the midfield really well. But yeah, so far I think England's best football has often come down the flanks with the fullbacks and whoever plays out wide. So yeah, it's by no means an easy fixture for England, but I think it would be a real blow if they went out against the Senegal team.
Well, I'm sure that the Lions of Taranga feel the same way about their competition as well. In fact, let's hear now from former Newcastle and Chelsea striker Demba Ba, who told us first of all about his memories of Senegal's last great knockout stage run back in the 2002 World Cup.
Attention, Diouf, centre de Oh là là, et but en deux temps, but Papa Diop.
What was it like back then when you were a young player? What was the impact watching Bouba Diop and Cissé Hadjidjouf, watching them in that World Cup for you?
The impact was big because they actually helped me know very early in my life and in my career that if I make it as a pro, that my number one choice would be playing for Senegal and not for France, for example. And they have had a big impact on how I saw the game, the African football, and the love also for the badge, you know. So that was a big, big impact in my career, I would say.
So the success that Senegal's currently having will have a similar impact, one hopes, on another generation of players. How important is it that you come into this clash as African champions?
It's right what you say. You know, the impact that the kids of today are having on the future generation is big. And I hope it's going to help us also get the best players, because whenever we have players that have double nationalities, whether it's French and Senegal, whether it's Italian, Senegal, or whatever, they are tempted on choosing European teams because of the history, because of also, we have to be honest, the value of European players are different than the value of African players. So for some of those that are choosing the European nationality, they're also thinking on their career and how much money they can make. Also, not all of them, but some of them, I'm saying. But the likes of Sadio Mane and Ganagay and Edouard Mendy and Kalidou Koulibaly and all of those, they're having a big impact on the youngest generation now. And the football also is growing fantastically also in Africa. So I believe in the future we will have the best players representing us in terms of the double nationality, you know. And the Sunday games is going to be like, you know, it's very important for us to prove that we are a big team, you know, for us to stay up there in the FIFA ranking and to prove that we deserve it.
Sadio Mane is second in the Ballon d'Or voting, out for this game. Idrissa Gueye is out as well. How confident are you, or how concerned are you, about Senegal's prospects without those two key players?
I'm wondering that I am as confident as I would have been if Sadio was in, right? Because it's not the case. But I'm still much confident that we can threaten England. You know, we know in the small competition like this. I mean, when I say small in terms of the amount of games, because obviously it's the biggest competition in the world. But when we have such an amount of game as 6, 7, 8, you know, games, we often see that the teams that defend very well, they get a bigger chance, you know, of winning a title. As I always say, you know, strikers win games and defense win title at the end of the day. And the defensive stature that we have in Senegal have been put in place by the coach for the last 7 years since he's been here. And since he once in a meeting said that Atletico Madrid was his favorite team, I knew that this team would have a very good defensive performances throughout the years. And we showed that, you know. And tomorrow is going to be another game where I believe that we're going to defend strongly, we're going to fight, we're going to give our life. And offensively, I think we have some threat to be able to damage England, even though not having Sadio is a big blow, and not having Ganagay also defensively is also a big blow, because he knows the high level. He's been playing in Paris for a couple of years. For more than a couple of years, he played in Paris, and he knows the high level of football and the intensity. And he also knows English football, because his two spell in Everton have taught him a lot about what England is about. I think it's going to be a tight game. I believe if we manage to score one, we're just going to defend for our lives, you know. Because once again, we are not the team, and the coach strategy is not the one who he wants to keep the ball. You know what I mean? Even though we have the players to do it, but he doesn't like to do it. So I think we're just going to defend for our lives. So if we manage to score first, good luck.
Okay. And if it goes to penalties, you must feel pretty confident as well.
If it goes to penalty, goodbye, England. You know, we're just going to press on the button and the history will happen in the last 18 months to just hurt them and damage them where it hurts. But at the end of the day, you know, it's all fine because they are big players, and I believe that they can overcome those situations. But it's difficult because sometimes people don't realize, but it can be traumatic for someone, you know. And if we are talking serious, it can be really traumatic for someone.
Well, yeah, I think some of the England players know that all too well. Denver, many thanks for joining us this evening, and well, best of luck with the game.
Thank you very much. Best of luck to you too.
What do we think, guys? Can England unlock this Atletico-esque Senegal defence?
I think it'll be a struggle. The Dutch found it difficult to break them down in their first game of the tournament. I don't think England will underestimate Senegal. I don't think they tend to underestimate any team really under Southgate, you know, like we've seen in the past. I'm definitely going to avoid Twitter for an hour before kickoff when Southgate inevitably picks a more cautious team and everyone goes mental. I think he might. There's a chance he might play three at the back because their main threat would be look like Ismaïl Assar with his pace cutting in from the left. I think you'd want Kyle Walker in to try and negate that, and you may think three at the back's the best way to go. But the biggest thing, or the biggest difference for England in this tournament for me is the bench options and how many of their attacking players really look in form and look like they can change a game coming off the bench or starting, you know, Saka, Foden, Grealish, Rashford, Sterling, Madison maybe. He might come in tomorrow against a low block if England are struggling. So the options there, that's massively in England's favour. And I don't think they'll need penalties to beat them.
I mean, there are lots of options there for Southgate. Less so for Aliou Cissé, particularly with Sadio Mane out of the picture. Here's a funny thing, though, Michael. Africa Cup of Nations group stages, they had Sadio Mane. They only scored one goal and it was a penalty. Without him at this tournament in three games, they've scored five and all from different scorers as well. So what does that mean?
Yeah, I do think there's a pattern sometimes that international teams are too reliant on one player. And when he's out, sometimes others step up. I mean, I don't think it's a completely different subject. I know, but I don't think it's been a bad thing for Brazil that they've had to cope without Neymar, because in past tournaments when he's either been out or gone missing, they've kind of gone to pot. So, maybe he has unlocked, so his absence has unlocked a couple of other players. I mean, they are a good team, even without him. They did look good in the group stage. I think even the game they lost against the Netherlands, they were pretty much the Netherlands equal in it. England won't take them lightly. But I do think it will be, I can imagine it being quite a scrappy game. And you mentioned Kane hasn't scored so far. I think he's particularly important for England, because I think there will be a lot of kind of crossing and balls in from wide positions. And I mean, Kane didn't score in the group stage of the Euros, I think I'm right in saying, and then came up with a big one against Germany in the second round. So, England might need something similar.
Okay. That game coming up at 7 o'clock UK time. Whoever wins it will meet the winner of France against Poland, which is played at 3 o'clock. Poland, Michael, you saw Poland against Argentina. What was that like?
I mean, very strange. Poland were remarkably negative, and then for the first half hour just decided not to pick up any more yellow cards and relied on the result from the other game going their way. I don't think they're a great team, actually, Poland. I think they were actually a little bit lucky to even qualify for the competition, because if you remember, obviously Russia got kicked out of that funny playoff system, and then they had the advantage of playing Sweden, who I think had gone to extra time in the first game of that playoff, so were quite exhausted 4 or 5 days later, whereas Poland were completely fresh. I haven't really seen any cohesion from them, really. They've got some very good players, obviously Lewandowski, but Zielinski's a really good player, Szymanski I like, but I'd be really surprised if they managed to get past France in this one. Mm. But Mbappe against Matty Cash, I think, is the battle we're all looking forward to.
Absolutely. I mean, the Poles are going to be looking forward to everything, no? Because it's their first game in the knockout stages of the World Cup for 36 years, Tim.
You say that, but apparently they're absolutely hating it back home in Poland. There's a really interesting piece in The Guardian today looking at the media reaction to their progression. Yeah, first time in the knockout since 1986, but particularly interesting passage here from a Polish journalist who wrote, "We will not tell our grandchildren by the fireplace years later about how the Polish national team progressed from the group 2022 World Cup. And yeah, one headline screamed, "Let's play ball." And apparently they're saying Lewandowski should be ashamed, and a lot of criticism aimed at Zielinski, actually, who was called invisible.
I bet no one's having a go at Wojciech Szczęsny though, because he's been great.
He has, yes, he's been. Without him, they arguably wouldn't be through. I mean, along with Australia and South Korea, they're probably the weakest teams that have progressed through, and it's just hard. It's hard to look past. It's really hard to look past France. You can't really put a case forward for Poland. I don't see them changing their style and appeasing the supporters and the media. But I don't think their defence is good enough to hold France at bay either.
Not good enough to hold France at bay, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Tim. It'd be a huge surprise if Poland went through. I think another thing to look forward to would be the battle between maybe the most old school number nine left in the competition in Olivier Giroud and Kamil Glik, who's just a real battling warhorse of a defender. I think that's just going to be really physical and lots of shirt pulling and backing in and all that kind of stuff, which once in a while I think can be quite enjoyable.
Absolutely. Very good, Michael. Well, we'll look forward to that and so much more in the two round of 16 matches that Sunday has in store. But that brings us to the end of today's Totally at the World Cup. Many thanks to everyone who participated, including Paul Tenorio and Demba Ba and Tim Spears and Michael Cox. Michael, best of luck getting out of that place that you're in.
Yeah, I can just about see the exit door over there.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
How long will it take you to get back to your accommodation?
Maybe 40 minutes on the bus.
It's, you'll be on a bus?
Yeah, it's the opposite end of town, really. When you're talking, in the context of historical World Cups, it's a very small place, you know, to get from stadium to stadium. But actually, it's still quite a big city. You forget that when you just have to go home at 1 a.m. But should be in bed by 1:30, which is an early finish for me on this tournament.
All right. Live it up. Savour every moment, Michael. Drink it in, you know, to the extent that that's permitted. Very good. Many thanks then for staying up for us tonight. And you as well, listener. We're back in 24 hours with another Totally at the World Cup. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and begambleaware.org.
The Athletic.